This is the discussion part of Lecture 16. And the Lecture 16 has as its information, who is in charge of my inner genius? My primary expression of a living entity. Yes, it's the morning lecture. My primary expression of a living entity is to be myself and have fun in everything I do. I am always happy. I am always delighted in my creation. I am always thrilled with my me-ness. These philosophical themes seem to be mere information. They cause us to become excited because about our being, excited about our purpose in life, able to do anything depending upon the games we want to play. Now, what games do we want to play? That's the question we ask ourselves. What games do we want to play? Do we want to play the game of being a winner? Hey, that's a good idea. Do you want to play the game of being a winner?
Yes.
What's the first thing a winner must do? He must be there at the start of the game. If they're starting the game and the winner is not there at the start of the game, he cannot be included in the game. He cannot be included in the race. And so if they're going to run a race and he's not there, he can't be in the race. So he is already out of the race. Now, that tells us that punctuality and so forth are very important for being a winner. You say, well, I'm a winner in life, and there is no start and finish to being a winner in life. Okay, if that's the game you want to play, then that's fine. You want to play the game of being the winner, of being the majesty that you are, of being the magic that you are, of being the genius that you are? How do you be a genius? How do you express being a genius? You express being a genius by first saying what?
I like me.
I like me. And when you like yourself, what do? Mm-hmm. When you like yourself, you act harmonious. You act gentle. You act beautiful. You act intelligent. Now, no one in the world can teach us manners. No one in the world can teach us actability. No one in the world can teach us how to sing. No one in the world can teach us how to be anything in life. No one. Only ourselves. And the reason only ourselves can teach us how to be anything is that only ourselves know what the rules of the game are. That's all. Only ourselves. Only ourselves. We are all super wonderful beings, super wonderful people, super wonderful caring individuals. And as super wonderful caring individuals, what takes place? We always do the right thing. We always do what is harmonious and happy and peaceful and loving. Now, do you know how to do things peaceful, harmonious, and loving? Do you? Do you always do it? And when might a person think that you're not doing it? When you're not loving yourself. Anytime we do not love ourselves, we do something that is not beneficial or loving to ourselves. I find this all very interesting because everything I talk about keeps going back to what we've been going through this last half hour. And it's very interesting and almost unfair to you guys because it puts a color on it that should not be there. Puts a color on it that doesn't need to be there. You say, well, what color is that? Well, the color of me telling you how to live your lives, me telling you what are the right things to do, me telling you what it means to be a gentleman or what it means to be a lady, me telling you about respect, me telling you that if you walk down a staircase and someone else is coming along the staircase, you step aside and wait for that person like Sibyl. I go down the staircase and Sibyl is coming up the staircase. Sibyl immediately steps aside so that I can walk down. Now, I would step aside so she could walk down because I respect her. But she respects me more and gets out of the way so that I can walk down. Now, is that beautiful to do something like that? Is that wonderful to do something like that? That's just normal human nature. That's the way you were brought up, right? You're brought up to respect other people and to get out of their way. Not to get out of their way, but to give them way and say, come, you come first. Go ahead. I'm just doing nothing important. And she's doing everything important as the commander of the entire program that we have here. She's just fabulous. Now, how do you be a genius? How do you be a master? How do you be fantastic in your life? How do you have manners? Where do they come from? Are they useful under all circumstances? And yes, they are. They're useful under all circumstances. Now, do you like yourself? If you like yourself, you will be the most wonderful person on earth. If you don't like yourself, you will take it out on your world. And you will tell your world that you don't like yourself by the way you act. Now, are you ready and willing and able to put a new cause in motion for yourself? Are you ready, willing, and able to live a new life, to live a new example of who you are?
Yes.
Well, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea for us all to reconsider who and what we are. So now, let's think about the game we play. Mary Dyke, what game do you want to play that brings you the most happiness in your life right this minute, right here in this place, right now? What game do you want to play that brings
Me
you...
Me, myself, I'm having fun.
Well, who is yourself?
Me.
Yeah, well, who is yourself?
God.
Yeah, well, who is yourself? Mary Dyke. And who is Mary Dyke? Are you a loving person?
Yes.
Are you a thoughtful person?
Yes.
Are you a rich person?
Yes.
Are you filled with ideas of creativity?
Yes.
Are you able to manage a household?
Yes.
Are you able to manage an industry?
Yes.
Are you able to manage a government? Could you be a governing officer like the president or whatever?
Yes.
Very easily, couldn't you?
Yes.
Now, why is it that you're able to do this?
Because I am God.
You are able to do this because you like yourself. Those people like themselves, and that's why they're successful in whatever they do. They like themselves. They take charge of themselves. They're being the master that they are. And this is what you want to do. You want to be the master of who you are. And how are you the master of who you are? By liking yourself. And when you like yourself, you can run a business, a corporation, because you do not feel you have to do everything yourself, right?
Yes.
You can delegate authority. You can say to the people who work in your business, this I'd like you to do, this you do, that you do, this you do, and know that those people are going to carry those things out. That's a genius. But if you don't like yourself, you aren't able to ask the question. You aren't able to have people do things for you. You feel that people are going to try to take your job away from you, take away your profession if you give them the opportunity to do things on your business and on your company. So, but you see, when you're stable, when you're happy with yourself, when you like yourself, you're not afraid of that. Now, Mary Dyke,
son,
are you afraid somebody's going to come and take over your job as being mother of your family?
No.
No, no. Nobody would want it. It's too much busyness, too much to do. No. Nobody would come and take it. You don't think about it for one reason. You like yourself. You like yourself, and you think that your family likes you. You like yourself, and you think your children like you. You like yourself, and you think that your world likes you. You see, when you like yourself in all areas, then truly you are the master. Now, truly, no one would want your job, not because they wouldn't want your job, but because they would rather create their own job. They'd rather create their own children, their own family, their own world. Make sense?
Yes.
So now you have nothing to worry about. Your family is yours. Nobody's going to steal it from you. So what's the next step that you would do besides liking yourself and knowing that your family are wonderful? You would go out and work with your family to be the most ideal family that they're able to be. Now, how can a family be ideal? A family is ideal when you train them in your values. Do you have any values? Bitte? Do you have any values? You know what values are? Do you have any judgments? Do you have any way of doing things that's good?
Yes.
Well then, those are your values. Do you think that you should clean your plate or that you should take your dirty plates off the table as each child takes their dirty plate off the table, puts it in the kitchen? Or do you think that one person should clear the table? Do you think that you have values of the way things should be done? And those are the way the things are done. Does your family like your values?
Yes.
Very much. Do they follow your values? Sometimes reluctantly, but they follow them. And the more that you naturally expect your values to be followed, the more your family follows it. Now, what about the senior dyke over here? What about him? Does he have values?
Yes.
Does he have a direction for life? Does he have a goal for life? Is he more interested in outside of his life or inside of his life? Is he more interested in his job or does he have more interest in his family? Is his family more important to him than anything else in the world? It all depends. This is what we have to come to a decision. If our family is more important to us than anything in the world, then that's number one, and we will have the ideal family. If, on the other hand, our job is more important, and because it is so important, it's really so vital and dynamic and good stuff like that, then we lose the value of our family and we have the value of our business. Or is the value of our church more important? Do we believe in our church? Do we believe in our metaphysical church? Do we believe in our Catholic church? Do we believe in our Lutheran church or Episcopal or Pentecostal church or whatever church do we go to? Is that where our belief is? Do we go there and do our nicest things at church and then come home and be naughty people? That's oftentimes the case. And when that's the case, the church really isn't anything to you. It's just a game you play that gives you a little bit of fun. Now, what if you were to take your respect for your church and your respect for the family and your respect for yourself and put them all together and let that be your way of living? Would you have a happy life?
Yes,
very much so. You would have a very happy, fulfilling life because your life would be what you believe. Your life would be what you think about yourself. Your life would be where your values are. And that's the important thing. That's a very important thing. Now, I see each one of you having a set of values. I see each one of you having a way of looking at your life that is so important that it outshines anything else you do. It outshines anything else you are. What are the majority of you here in this room, in this seminar? What are the majority of them? The majority of you are ones who want to follow a program. But to follow a program, you got to learn what it is. And when you learn what the program is, and then you say, wow, that is spectacular. That is tremendous. That's what I want to do. Then you do it. Now, those three steps, all leading up to then you do it. How many of you have arrived at the third step, then you do it? Arrived at the third step of knowing how, knowing what, and then doing it. I would say all of you are there. All of you are ready to put into action what you believe about yourself. And do you believe that you're wealthy?
Yes.
I like that. Do you believe you're healthy?
Yes.
Do you believe that you're intelligent?
Yes.
Do you believe that you're magnificent?
Yes.
Do you believe you're God?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yes. You believe you're God?
Yes.
Fantastic. Are you God?
Yes.
Do you like being God?
Yes.
Yes. I am God.
If you like being God, then you will do all things that God is in you, as you, through you, for you, and you will enjoy it to the hilt. Now this is what I see for each of you. I see each one of you loving yourself and being God and enjoying being God in every single step of the way. You are fantastic. You know that?
Yes.
You are glorious, all of you. You are outstanding and you are good. Now, Mr. Lucky, why are you here in this class?
I'm here to enjoy the program.
You what?
I'm here to enjoy the program.
You're here to enjoy the program.
Yes.
I think that's very admirable. That's admirable. Now, what is even more admirable? I am here to learn the program and to learn to apply the program. To enjoy it is beautiful. I like myself. You think that's just enjoying yourself. When you say, I like myself, what you're doing is you're saying a whole course of action which goes out wherever you go, people look at you and say, gee, that's a nice guy. That's a good guy. That's a friendly guy. That's a wonderful guy. He likes himself. You can tell he likes himself. He likes himself by the way he handles himself. Now, what does Lucky do? Does Lucky like himself?
No.
Hmm?
Yes.
Does Lucky think that he's a good man?
Yes.
Does Lucky think he's intelligent?
Of course.
You got a good supporter here, Lucky. Hang on to him. Is Lucky all these things we say?
Yes.
Why is he all these things? How could we see him be all these things?
He is our reflection.
He is our reflection. He is a pure reflection of what we are. And if we see Lucky as not a good reflection, then that's what we are. If we see anything in this world that's not good, then that's what we are. And you say, well, Herb, you were upset with some people before, and you were seeing them as not a good reflection. Does that mean that you're not a good reflection, Herb? That's right. That's exactly right. That means I am not a good reflection because I did not look through the eyes of God, which is incapable of seeing anything unlike its own nature. If I were looking through the eyes of God, I would see all things beautiful, pure, and good, totally without any need for redemption, without any need for correction, without any need for anything else. I would be that way if I were looking only through the eyes of God. You say, well, Herb, you're teaching this stuff and you're not looking through the eyes of God. Herb, what is all that about? You're saying that you're teaching one thing and you're doing another thing. Herb, what kind of a clown are you? Well, how are you seeing me? Do you see beyond the appearance that you see in me of being upset with you? Do you see beyond that appearance? Do you see beyond it to your original purity and integrity, your wholeness? Do you see beyond those appearances to the goodness that you are?
Yes.
Are you good?
Yes.
Yes. Are you very good?
Yes.
Are you super good?
Yes.
Are you marvelously good?
Yes.
Are you fantastically good?
Yes.
Am I good?
Yes.
I'm glad you said that. Well, this is what we are. We see in ourselves and in others exactly what we see ourselves being. Now, see yourself being this wonderful, magical, marvelous being of who you are. And unlike me, do not go around judging anybody for what they do. Do not go around looking at people and saying they should be the way you think they should be. Because if you do that, you are losing sight of who you are. Can you imagine the Queen of England correcting anybody for doing anything in her presence? The Queen of England would never think of doing that because that's not her responsibility. It's not her vision. It's not her activity. She has people who are protocol people who handle those things. She doesn't have anything to do with it. She doesn't have to say to anyone, genuflect or take off your hat or do this. He doesn't. She lives her life. Her life is so perfectly full of everything perfect that everybody who comes in her world does what they're expected to do. Do you know that before people enter the presence of the Queen of England, they must take a class? And that includes the President of the United States and his wife. The President of the United States and his wife had to take a class before they went before the Queen of England. Every president had to go take the class before they took it. Now, they didn't call it a class. They just called it a training session. How does Mrs. President genuflect before the Queen? Does she bow, or does she bend her knee, or what does she do? How does any person coming before the Queen, whether they're high or low, whether it's the Pope or no, do you think the Pope genuflects to the Queen? Yes. Did you know that? The Pope bows before the Queen. Because the Queen represents her nation. She represents the authority of her nation. She represents who she is. It's not the Queen herself as a person. It's her office. And does the Queen, in turn, genuflect or bow before the Pope? Before his office? Yes. Did President Reagan do that when he visited the Queen? Oh, yeah. Everyone does that, not because the Queen is so worthy of it, which she is, but because that's the office, and that's the way that you handle it before the office. Now, are you ready to live in a world where those things take place? Are you ready to live in a world where you are the master of all the protocol? If you see the Queen and she has a cobra behind her ready to strike and hit her, and you are walking into her presence, and you grab the Queen, you lift her up and carry her away from the cobra, that's not protocol. The protocol people, if they would see that and not know the details, they would say, oh, don't put the Queen down, you don't do that, you don't lift the Queen up, you don't touch the Queen, you don't touch the royal body, you don't do that. And they don't realize that you're taking her away from your fearfulness of the cobra. And you didn't know that the previous people who visited the Queen was the Maharaja of Maharishtha, and he brought her his pet cobra. And his cobra was trained and defanged so that it couldn't hurt anybody, but his cobra was trained to be attentive to the Queen. You didn't know that. Nobody told you that. You just saw the Queen with this cobra behind her, and the Queen doesn't have a cobra around her, and it scared you silly. And you acted contrary to protocol. Would you be forgiven? Would you be forgiven for breaking protocol? Quite likely, because you were more interested in saving the Queen's life than you were in showing respect for her office. Now, would saving her life show respect for her office? I would think so. I would think that would be very, very wonderful. Why is it that President's men walk in front of him and behind him and around him so that if any bullet is shot at the President, it hits them? I mean, what a job. Who would want to have a job where you're protecting your president and if he gets shot, you take the bullet. You get in the way of that bullet if you possibly can. And it's amazing. But we live in a world that has protocol under so many circumstances. Now, what's the protocol for you? What's the protocol for you? Be yourself and have fun. The protocol for you is to like yourself. The protocol for you is to think your world is very, very, very wonderful. And this is what I think for you. And this is what I'm going to create henceforth whenever I visit you. That all of you know the protocol of dealing with whoever is your sharer, teacher, or person who comes to give you ideas and thoughts and wisdom. And you just respond to that person in great proper protocol. That's a good word for it. Yes. Look up the word protocol. Protocol means the proper things to do under any circumstances with a person, a place, or a thing. And it's wonderful. It's a fantastic thing. Now, we've been rambling on here for quite a little bit. Now, is there anybody who has any question or any thought or anything they wanted to say now? Please speak up and share whatever you have to say. Okay? Anybody? Yes? Oh, we have a note here? We have a note? Oh, boy. It's 11 o'clock. We have a note. And the note says, can fear of something bring or bring or attract negativity to me? Great. Okay. Can fear of something bring or attract negativity to me? No. You bring negativity to you, but fear cannot bring it to you. And you cannot attract anything to you because you are the center of all life and you create all things. Nothing can ever be attracted to you, even though law of attraction is one of the programs that they have out. Nothing can be attracted to you. You create all things. You create the circumstance of this room. You create the people of this room. You create a loving family. You create a rotten family. And it's all your creation by your thought. And it's not attracting it to you because you're a naughty lady or you're a bad lady or you're a dumb lady. You create it. Dumb, unattractive ladies can have the most money in the world, have the most beautiful body in the world, have everything going their way, and be terrible. We spoke the other day about Scrooge, somebody who's got a lot of money and uses it only for himself and is just not very nice of a person. And can he, because he's negative, attract negative things to him? No. He creates everything that happens in his life. And your question is, can we attract it to ourselves? Your question is, can we create it? No, not create it. We say here, can fear of something bring or attract negativity to me? No. Fear of something can cause you to use bad judgment. Fear of something can cause you to not act as positively as you should, but it does not attract it to you because there is no law of attraction. There is only the law of positive thinking, the law of putting causes in motion. And if you don't put the cause in motion, if you put the cause in motion of unhappy things happening in your life and you fear them, it's just part of the whole picture. It has nothing to do because of fear itself. Did I make that clear at all? Mm-hmm. I think maybe it's more confusing than it's clear. Okay. Can fear of something bring or attract negativity to me? No. How do I attract good into my life? I attract good into my life by putting the cause in motion to bring about an awareness that all is in divine order. I cannot attract good to me because I'm not a magnet. I'm not something that draws it to me because I'm a good person or a bad person. A bad person doesn't draw bad people to them. Good persons don't draw good people to them. You know, like attracts like. But when you are a good person, you build a good environment for yourself and you build a good world for yourself. And when you are a fearful person or a bad person, as you might call it, then you put all conditions into motion to experience those things that you don't want. When you have fear in your heart, you bring all those things into motion for yourself, not by attracting them, but by acting upon them. A dog is going to bite you, and you're walking along, and he wants to bite you, and you're very frightened of him. You're not familiar with dogs at all. And so you think to yourself, oh, he's going to bite me. And so your fear makes that dog feel insecure, because the dog doesn't know what you're going to do, whether you're going to kick at it or hit it or throw stones at it or something. So it bites out of retaliation for not knowing what you're going to do. Now, if you get down on one knee and you say, here, puppy, come, this great big dog, big teeth and stuff, here, puppy, come, come, puppy, and the dog instantly mellows, because you expect the dog to be loving and gentle. And so then the dog is loving and gentle. You created it out of your expectation, out of how you handled him and how he is. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's the way that principle works. Okay, is there any other question from anybody else? We have our friend Akin, and he says, I'm sorry for being inconsiderate. It's not intentional. Well, to say to me, you're sorry for being inconsiderate, means that you understand that what you did was inconsiderate. But to say to me that it was not intentional is a discourtesy beyond measure, because we never do anything by accident. And if you were a little boy, and a little boy who didn't know the game, and the little boy came in and did things that were not very nice, that we might say was not intentional. But even that is intentional, because we always know what we do at all times. And while I say to you, Mr. Akin, I say to you, I love you, I respect you, and I have only good thoughts in my mind for you. But I would send you to protocol school on the drop of a hat, because it would be a wonderful thing to learn good protocol for how to act with your boss, how to act with your employees, how to act with your wife, with your husband, with your children, with your world. If we know how to act with the people in our world with respect and honor, with trust, with truth, always with truth, we find that they're just beautiful to live with. If we are ever lying, and we do lie to save our behind, we get in trouble. I have people on campus who do silly things at times. You can imagine how tough I am on campus. People who do silly things at times, they say, I'm sorry, Herb, I didn't mean that. Or worse yet, they don't say, I'm sorry. They do some stupid thing, and they don't say, I'm sorry. And they want to pretend that they didn't realize they did something stupid. And I know what they're doing. I know why they're doing it. I'm inside their head. You're inside my head. We know what each other is thinking. We know what human beings think. We know what human beings respond to. And divine beings, we know even more. A divine being is unconditional love. And so a divine being would never do anything that it said, I'm sorry for. It would do something, and it perhaps improperly, and wish it hadn't done it after they'd done it. And in that case, they would just say, excuse me. Not I'm sorry, but excuse me. Because I don't care whether they're sorry or not, but they care whether I excuse them or not. And, of course, anyone who does anything in my world, I have to play the role of Jesus. And I have to say, like Jesus, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. And they were hanging Jesus on the cross. You know, how cooler can you get? You know, that's rather a definite thing. But Jesus said, forgive them. They know not what they do. And it's true. We don't know the depth of the ramifications of the things that we do. And because we don't know the depths of the things that we do, we sometimes do things not consciously, not unconsciously, but we do things carelessly. And doing things carelessly is it. Now, I'll tell you this story here. I have a staff on campus of very charming, beautiful ladies. There's Ellen, there's Sylvia, and there's Ingeborg. And there's the dogs and cats. And they are devoted, wonderful people. And I tell Ingeborg, I'll make my own eggs, because I know how to cook eggs perfect every time. I know how to make my eggs exactly the way I like them. Firm, not too firm, with the yolk soft, but not gushy, with everything just ideal. I know how to do it. And Sylvia says, no, I'll do it for you. And she runs to the stove and wants to do it herself, because she's the cook in the morning. And so I say, okay. So she brings me this gushy egg. And I say, that's not right. And I eat it and I don't care. Then the next day, she doesn't bring me a gushy egg. She brings me an egg that is all chopped up. It fell in the pan. It got broken and became scrambled. And so I ate it. And then every day she brings me an egg of variable description. And I say to her, Sylvia, would you mind if I cooked my own egg? No, Herb, I want to do it for you. I want to do it right for you. I want to do it. I said, Sylvia, you do not want to do it right for me. If you would do it right for me, where do I tell you to put the heat?
Number three.
Where?
Low.
Medium. Medium. Didn't I ever tell you? You put on your electric stove the heat at medium. Hot enough to cook it, but not hot enough to handle it in such a way that you can't control it. Well, they put it on high first to get the stove warmed up, and then they put it on low, and between the two, they have an uncooked egg. And I say, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, the same thing. They'll hear this and they'll think to themselves, what are you telling those people about me, you know? Well, I tell anything. And people tell anything they think they know about me too. But I tell anything. And is Sylvia a bad lady for doing what she's doing?
No.
No, she's not bad. Does Sylvia love me?
Yes.
Totally. Does she think I'm wonderful and that she wants to do anything she can to please me?
Yes.
Yeah, she does. But why doesn't she cook the eggs right? Because she is careless. And then when I say to her, this is too much, this is too little, this is this, she says, can I ever do anything right? Can I ever do anything? I did my best, and it happened because the egg fell in the pan, and it happened. And I don't want to know excuses. Why did you hit my car with your car? Well, I put my foot on the brakes and it didn't stop. Okay, have your brakes fixed and have my car fixed too. But why did you hit my car? You didn't hit my car because your brakes didn't work. You hit my car because you aimed at my car instead of some other vehicle or some other thing. You didn't have to aim at my car and hit my car. You didn't have to do that. You know that? You're over here and your car is out of control and you could drive into a tree. You could drive into a person. You could drive into a house. Herb, how terrible you talk. No. We do things by choice. And we make bad eggs by choice. We make good eggs by choice. Now, Ellen takes time in cooking an egg. And she will make an egg almost as perfect as I make it. But Ellen has her own little way of doing it too. She has cooked for her family for many, many years, and she knows it all. And it's difficult for her to listen to what I tell her. I want to do it my way because it brings me the result I want. My way may or may not be right, but it brings me the result I want. You want to do it your way because it brings you the result you want. Now, is your result always what you want?
No.
Well, most of the time. Well, is it always what you want? Well, most of the time. If it's not always what you want, then there's some improvement that can be made in your technique of whatever you're doing. And we want to always be perfect, if at all possible. When is it that we cannot be perfect? When we don't have the time to do it right. They have a saying in business and everywhere, you do not have time to to do it right. But you do have time to do it over. We have time to do it again. So I tell Sylvia, who is a super lady, just a glorious person. I love her and admire her and respect her. But I tell Sylvia, Sylvia, if you're cooking an egg for me, make that egg perfect. I usually have two eggs. I said, make that egg perfect. If for any reason the egg is not perfect, throw it out and make two more eggs and make it perfect. If you want to eat what you're going to throw out, that's okay too. But don't give it to me. Only give me perfect eggs. Only give me eggs that you have given your very best to. Can you make perfect eggs? Yes. Then make them. Make them. If you have not made a perfect egg, don't serve it to me. Don't give it to me. Only give me a perfect egg. And she said, but then I'd never get the eggs made. I'd never... Why can't you do it right the first time? You do it right the first time when you build habits up within you of doing it right. Chitterby loves to play with a hammer. And he takes a hammer, and he loves to pound, and he loves to put nails in boards. And he puts nails in boards, bang, bang, bang. The nails are bent over, the nails are doing everything. And then one day, Chitterby says to me, Herb, you know about pounding nails. Why is it my nails don't go in? And why is my nails bend over? And why is my nails get all crooked and stuff? And I said, Chitterby, there's only one reason. You are not doing it correctly. Correctly? Is there a correct way to pound a nail? You just hit the nail. And I say, yes, there's a correct way. Number one, this is like golf. Number one, you take the hammer in your hand and you hold the hammer at the end of the hammer, not by the head, at the end. But it's so heavy. Well, if you want to use a hammer, that's how you use it. And then you take a nail and you hold it with your fingers and you take the hammer and maybe you tap it first just to make it stand up. Then you take your finger away and then you take your hammer and you go whum and you hit the board. You say, always hit the board or bend it over. Like the golfer, see the ball going where you want to put it. Like the carpenter, see the nail going where you want to put it. Would you like to take a nail and a board and have that nail go right straight through the board? Yes. Would you like the nail to stay straight all the way and be solid?
Yes. Yeah.
How do you do it? You learn, like playing golf, how to hold the hammer and how to hit the nail. And so you hold the hammers. Now, why do you hold the hammer at the end of the handle? So that you got the weight of the head of the hammer to pound the nail. You don't take boom, 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 boom with your own muscle pushing it in. You take the head of the hammer and it goes boom, boom, with all the power that it has. It works beautifully. Then the nail goes in. But you visualize the nail going straight in. You don't visualize the nail dancing on the board. You visualize it going straight in. And then you hit it once. Shoom! And it goes right straight through because the hammer has enough force in it, enough weight on it, that it just goes right straight through and your nail goes in every time. You stand there with a pocket full of nails and you hit them. Boom! 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 And your board is just a sheet of nails. But you've learned a lesson. Now, you take 10 minutes, half hour, and practice that, and you will always hit the nail on the head and drive it straight home. You will always have your hammer perfect. And you know what else you do, Mr. Chitterby? What else you will do? You will hit that nail in such a way that it will go down instantly, flush with the top of the board, with no indentation, no dent in the board, no anything that's imperfect. When you know how to do it, your results are always perfect. When you take the time to learn how to fry an egg, or poach an egg, or prepare an egg, or whatever you're going to call it, when you take the time to do it, you will always make a perfect egg. And the egg doesn't care what you do to it. Your tummy doesn't care what you do to it. But your eyes see what is done. And your eyes tell you if this has been done with a lot of love or with a lot of carelessness. And if you ever make an excuse for doing something improper, for doing something unlearned that you should have known, you're a fool. But if you just do it again and do it again, throw the eggs out or eat them or give them to the children or whatever, but learn to make perfect eggs. And in our house, we make perfect eggs. If you went to cook in a restaurant, you'd be expected to make perfect eggs and there'd be no excuses. And that stove is always on medium, always cooking perfectly. It takes a moment for it to do it, but you know how long it is. You get your French fries ready, you get the various other things ready, and the egg is always ideal. Always perfect. If you turn it over, it's perfect. If you don't turn it over, it's perfect. You learn how to do it perfectly because you are a quick, what do they call it, quick cook or something. You are perfect at your profession. You are ideal at your profession. Whether it's pounding nails, frying eggs, cleaning your house, being a husband or a wife or our child, to be a perfect child, be a perfect wife, be a perfect husband, takes a little bit of care. If your husband comes into the house every day and he comes up to you and he kisses you on the cheek or the chin or the neck and he says, "Sweetheart, I'm so happy to come home to you. You're the most wonderful wife." And just go on. That's unadulterated love. If she has to say, "Kiss me, hug me, hold me, oh, I just need to have your embrace," then she's in trouble and he's in trouble. But if they naturally reciprocate, you like that word, huh? If they naturally reciprocate their love for each other, they will have the happiest marriage in the world. And they can. But if the wife thinks the husband's got to do all the showing of love, or the husband thinks the wife has to do all the showing of love, then there's problems. And if you're not married and you want to be married, be the most loving lover ever. Not sex, just be the most loving lover ever. I believe personally from my upbringing that sex is to be something you do when you get married. Something you do when you have your partner with you forever. It is not something that you do on the street corner or something that you do because it's convenient, but it's something that is precious. What you can do anytime is snuggle and huggle and love each other and kiss each other, but the other has its time. Now, c'est la vie. Well, you certainly got your money's worth out of that quarter hour. I love you, and have a wonderful lunch.